It is indeed time for the Derek Shelton Show. The Pirates manager is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted HVAC plumbing provider for over 50 years. I should also tell you that Fan Weather, brought to you by Sun Chevrolet, springs here. So are the deals at Sun Chevy, sunchevy.com. High of 72 today with a 30% chance of rain. Shelty, I guess some uncomfortable topics arise today, starting with the offense and the numbers being what they are, really have been for a while, sort of a pretty much a bottom five offense in run scoring since Andy Haynes got here as your hitting coach, and frankly, it doesn't appear to be getting better. It would appear that younger hitters are regressing. So my first question today is, what's the best case for backing him as your guy moving ahead here?
Well, I think the best case is, first off, you didn't even say good morning to me, Stark. I mean, just because we go a couple of days and we don't play well, we lose the pleasantries. What are we doing there?
Good morning, Shelty.
Good morning, Stark. All right. I think the first thing is, this is a collective thing, and I understand, and you and I have talked about this numerous times, because I used to sit in the chair that Andy Haynes sits in, and it's a chair that people, like to criticize, and I completely understand that. I think the overarching thing is we got to get better collectively, and, we have to have better bats, because you're right. Yeah, there is some uncomfortable topics because we need to be better offensively right now, and we're not. But, I don't think, and I've told you this before, I don't think, casting the blame on one person is fair.
The guys, I think, that you have in your lineup that probably you were counting on to be really good, that's probably a little bit more alarming, that some of those guys haven't gotten on track. You've been around a long time. You've been a hitting coach for a long time. I mean, how do you get these guys on track? When I'm talking about some of the big, the biggest names you have in your lineup.
Yeah, well, some of that just comes with time. I mean, we're at April 30th, and what you see out of good major league hitters is, over the course of time, things will kind of stabilize a little bit. And that's not in any way to say that we're not going through a tough stretch right now, because we are going through a tough stretch, and we need some of those guys to get on track. But, over the course of, over the course of a couple months or a full year, those things tend to stabilize out. Right now, it's just really being magnified because we do not have, a lot of guys that are hot.
It feels, Shelty, and granted, it's 1 month for sure, but it feels like the most important theme here is your younger hitters, the guys that you're bringing in here to be your future, have not been progressing for a while, going back to last year. Is that fair?
Well, I think it's fair that hitting in the big leagues is hard, and everybody thinks that young players, when they come to the big leagues, they're automatically just going to be like, all right, I got this, and we're going to go. So, yeah, I mean, we some of our young guys need to get better, but I think the other portion of this is, you look at young players throughout the game, hitting is very hard at this level. And, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. It's just like we've talked about on the pitching side. Everybody expects when guys come to the big leagues that they're going to just dominate pitchers that are hitters. That doesn't happen all the time.
What I would say is the, delicate balance that you have with, say, a guy like Henry Davis, at some point thinking about maybe sending him back to the minors just to work on some things. What is that balance you have with a guy like that? Do you worry about his confidence and all the other stuff? Or is there a definitive plan that you have when it comes to something like that?
I don't think there's a definitive plan in terms of, what we think we're going to do right now. I do think that the definitive plan has to be, whatever it is, at any point has to be about Henry Davis and what's best for him. And I think what we're seeing is, catching in the big leagues and hitting in the big leagues at the same time, it's hard. It's challenging. And Henry's going through a time right now where he's probably missing some pitches that he hasn't previously or, won't miss in the future. But right now, we got to make sure he kind of relaxes a little bit, because there's times it looks like he's trying to do too much.
Would you rule out the idea of sending Cruz to the minors for a little bit, Shelty? Does he have an option left? Is that possible, or is that something that you guys would rule out?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even, again, I think to Paul's comment earlier, it's a long season, and, we got to let some of these guys that our bigger guys get back on track. I mean, Cruzy had a couple good games in a row. You know, I think one of the things we're seeing still, and we've talked about it every week, is, you know, he missed a lot of time last year, and we've got to continue to ramp up his at-bats.
Is Davis included in that too? The guy that you're just going to – are you going to give him a lot more time, or is that I have to believe that you're thinking about possibly the minors might be best for him right now. No?
I think whenever we do with Henry Davis, we're going to do with Henry Davis in mind, because he is important to us and we do believe in him and the player.
When you pinch hit for him, I believe twice recently, is that a difficult decision in terms of maybe this is good for him to go up there in situations like this and learn as a young guy, but we also have a game to win? How do you walk that line?
No, I think right now, as we've talked about, we're walking it as, you know, if we see the opportunity to help us win a game, we're going to put ourselves in that opportunity. And some of those opportunities have been, you know, we hit for Henry Davis. I mean, we hit for Joey Bart the other day. I mean, we've hit for Rowdy. I mean, we've hit for other people, Connor Joe and Alika. So I think right now it's just whatever we feel best to see to win the game, we're going to do.
Last night, Derek, I thought some of the at-bats, especially late in the game, maybe weren't the best of at-bats that I've seen, you know, from your guys. Are you of the mind of you just sort of shower it off and move on, or do you, you know, have discussions about some of the things that you saw that maybe that they can do better? I mean, how do you try and move that forward?
Well, first off, yeah, you do have to wash it off, because last night wasn't fun to watch. I mean, that's first and foremost. But if we go into it today with that mindset, then, you know, we're in trouble. So we have to wash it off. The second thing is, yeah, there are conversations. We didn't have good at bats. I didn't think we had good at bats really throughout the whole game. So, you know, we had opportunities in the first, but overall we just did not have good at bats yesterday. And I think the situation we have to do is, yeah, we have to address some of them. We have to have conversations about them.
It's the Derek Shelton Show here on 93.7 The Fan. Shelty, I think fans might want to hear this from you, is how would you describe the team-wide offensive approach? We see some teams are, you know, easily identified as aggressive, free-swinging. Others are more patient, tend to work pitchers, emphasize speed, whatever. How would you describe your team's team-wide offensive approach?
Well, right now, I think, you know, which is different than earlier in the year, I think right now we're passive. You know, we need to be a little bit more aggressive. I think that was probably a little bit of Paul's statement of, you know, last night, the last few innings. But it looks like, you know, early in the year, we were more aggressive. We were putting the ball in play more. And right now, we look a little bit more passive. And we've got to get out of that and give ourselves opportunities.
Yeah, that was the thing that, like I was saying. I thought you guys were letting too many pitches go past you that were probably hittable pitches, and then I kind of felt like they were swinging at some pitches later in the counts that they could have laid off. You know, that's something that just seems to me where the guys are just a little bit off. I mean, is it a matter of just telling them, listen, we've got to be more aggressive, or can you show them film wise, or I mean, how do you get that moving forward?
Well, honestly, your first thought, I wish it was as easy as saying, like, hey, we need to be able to do this. I really do. That would have helped me out a lot about 15 years ago. But I think the biggest thing is we got to get guys away from being in between. That what you're describing is hitters being in between, and then they end up taking the good pitches and swinging at the bad pitches. And, you know, that's the messaging that we need to continue to carry on with.
Meanwhile, you have some guys, last I checked at least, that were raking in the minors, Gonzalez, Jiwon Bae, Peguero. You guys must be getting tempted here to try to jumpstart things offensively, yes?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are off to good starts. I mean, all those guys, which is really important, and those guys are important to us. I mean, if it comes to a point where we think we need to, you know, make a change, then it's good that we have guys that are swinging the bat well in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say from last night's game, and obviously he wasn't quite as good as he's been, but Bailey Falter continues to be one of the most surprising or best developments for you guys. I mean, last night he got a couple of guys got the ball, you know, bat on the ball, and he gave up a couple sack flies. But for the most part, he's been really good, hasn't he?
Yeah, he really has done a good job for us. I mean, he had the really tough start the first his first inning, the first five hitters, and after that, he's pitched really, really well. And I didn't think he threw the ball poorly last night. He cracked a nail in the third inning, and it kind of affected it, the ability to throw his breaking ball, and it's eventually why we ended up taking him out of the game. But he left a couple balls up. But overall, Bailey's done a really good job, as has our entire starting pitching group.
Shelty, McCutchen, you put him up at leadoff. He had a couple good games, and now it's back, I think, 1-for-16, 8 strikeouts. For a guy who's aging as he is, doesn't play the field when he's struggling like this, how much do you weigh sort of the intangibles that he brings to you guys, and at what point do you sort of have to drop him much lower in the order?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've moved Key back to the leadoff spot over the last couple of days. And, with Kutch, I think we have to monitor a lot of things because, like you said, he is an older player. I mean, he gave us a spark there when he went to the top with a couple home runs to lead off games. So we just have to make sure that, we keep him in the best positions possible.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got a number of guys, and we were actually earlier in this show trying to put together lineups right now with given the fact you've got some guys struggling. What can you do lineup wise to try and get this thing going?
I don't know, but if you guys had suggestions, I would have appreciated you starting the show with them.
we tried, but I mean, Joe was giving you a hard time, and I was like, all right, well, let's put together a lineup right now of, all these guys, and we came to the conclusion that you've got four guys that probably are hitting reasonably well right now, and a lot of other guys you're trying to juggle right now.
Well, the first thing I liked there, Paul, is that's the first time you've thrown Starkey under the bus with me, so you just got a ton of points right there. I have been trying to mix and match it and go back and forth and looking for the right combination. And, again, at some point we're going to find that combination that clicks and then we go with it. But right now we got to get going as a group.
I mean, when I look at your lineup, honestly, from last night, Shelty, I start to think, well, what exactly can they do? Because I see one guy who's still in his prime, who's a proven major league hitter from your lineup last night, and that's Brian Reynolds, one guy.
Was there a question there?
Am I crazy? That's what I see. No, you can only shuffle so many guys.
Well, I think we have to shuffle guys. I mean, Key continues to get better, and he's having better at-bats. I mean, he had, hit last night, walked last night. But, we've got to find, I think, going back to Paul's point, earlier in the show, we've got to get some of these guys going that we think are going to be a big part of our offense. Now, the other thing and I know people don't like to hear it, but, it's a long season. It's April 30th. We got to give them the runway to get going, too.
Well, and especially when you're managing so many different players that are younger, obviously that's a part of it. But, again, we keep going back to the idea that sooner or later some of these guys have to get on track, right?
Yeah, I think that is the point. I mean, if not, Starkey's going to lose his mind. So, I mean, I think that is the case. We've got to get these guys going.
Let's talk specifically about Sawinski. And my hope for him this year was the peaks and valleys would sort of even out. And man, it's a tough watch right now with him. What's not happening for him that needs to?
Well, I think he's the guy we need to be more aggressive. He has the ability to control the zone. He sees balls and strikes. We've got to get him to just be more aggressive because there's power in there. There's impact in his bat. It's just we got to make sure that he's getting swings off in every at bat.
I know it's an older school thought, but your corner infielders have combined the three primary guys have combined for four home runs. Is that concerning to you, or is there a different metric that you guys are looking at and not so concerned about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that wherever the impact comes from or the power comes from, it doesn't matter. I mean, the game has kind of changed in that light anymore. But, I mean, do we need our guys to drive the ball more? Yeah, 100%. But in terms of looking at it positionally like that, that's not really the way we're looking at it anymore.
On the good news front, and I know it's been a struggle here, I think you're on a 5-14 clip Shelty. Priester looked really good in his last start. What changed for him?
I think staying in attack mode. You know, the biggest thing with Quinn is when he goes after guys and uses his full repertoire, we saw what we saw the other day in San Francisco. I mean, he used all four pitches. He was ahead in the count. The struggles that Quinn has had at the big league level is when he's had to pitch from behind, and that causes, you know, all kinds of issues. The other day, he was ahead in the count. He used all four pitches. He did a really good job kind of mixing and matching.
Ronzi Contreras last night came in and did a reasonably good job. Still, you know, walked a couple guys, I think. Gave up a couple of hits. Where is he at? Is he somebody that you feel like is slowly but surely going to become a very, very useful player for you down, you know, over the course of the season?
Yeah, I think he's trending. He is definitely trending in the right direction. We're seeing the velo tick back up into 94, 95, 96. You know, last night he struggled with his curveball a little bit, and that's what was attributed to the walks, and then was able to pitch himself out of it. You know, I think he ended up walking J.J. Bleda, just threw him basically three not very good breaking balls, and then came back and used the slider and the fastball to get Nick Allen to end the inning. But overall, I think, you know, he's trending in the right direction.
Lastly, Shelty, I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about two guys. One is Skeens. Might we see him in the next couple weeks? And the other one's Grandal. Might he return when you guys return?
Yeah, well, so with Skeens, he's pitching tonight in Indianapolis, and, you know, that's the update there. With Grandal, unfortunately, you know, he was in Omaha with the team, and they had, I think, three or four straight days of either tornadoes or tornado warnings or weather where he essentially lost rehab days. So this week will be a big one for him. He has not caught back-to-back yet, which was something that was very important to us. And then I think after that we'll be able to make a decision.
Joe, I'm disappointed you didn't ask him about his the speed bat method. The speed.
Remember, we were looking at that.
The commercial we were watching with you, Derek, from
City Limits here. You were in a commercial for a speed bat. Did you make good money off
that?
The speed hitter.
Yes. If you're going to call it, you got to call it right. It's the speed hitter.
I'm just saying, yeah. Could you use that on your players?
I will tell you this, Starkey, as much as you love golf, the guy that owns that company makes a lot of really cool golf products. None of them which have ever helped my game. And I think if City Limits did find that, you will actually find Shelty with black hair and not the white hair that I have now.
Yeah, no white beard, nothing like that. You know what? I just thought of something here at the end, though. I mentioned to Paul, I'd love to have somebody break down Henry Davis, what he's doing here, because I obviously have an amateur view of this, but you are a former hitting instructor and someone who, you know, cut your teeth in Major League Baseball as a hitting instructor. When I watch him and when I hear other people talk about watching him, it just looks like he's incredibly, incredibly pull happy. Like I see no clue that he is even inclined to use the whole field. Am I crazy? What are we looking at here with Henry Davis, and how do you get him to relax and maybe alter that approach?
Well, I think you used a word there that's really important and very difficult for a major league hitter is relax. You know, especially young hitters, when things aren't going good, it's easier to go the other way. You know, at times it looks like he's gripping the bat really tight. And we got to get him to relax, because your point is correct. When he's in the middle of the field, that's when he's at his best. And that's the conversations we're having with him every day right now.
From his college days, did he hit home runs to the opposite field? Did he use the whole field?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think back last year, he hit the home run off Ohtani.
That's right.
Center field. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But, again, when you're a young player in the big league, sometimes it goes fast. And we've got to get him back to, like, what his roots are and using the whole field.
Well, Shelty, we appreciate the time. Did you have another question,
no,
Paul?
No, I just was wondering if he uses the speed hitter with his hitters. That's all I was asking him.
I don't even know if I have a speed hitter. I'd have to look. I'd have to ask and see. I know I have the original one in my garage at home in Florida, but I don't know if we have one.
Thank you, Shelty.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Good luck
tonight.
Derek Shelton. Man, there's a lot to talk about there,
yeah.
Isn't there?
Well, what was good is he's always willing to answer questions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm checking here on O'Neal Cruz. I asked Destiny's Child, Andrew Destin, and also Zangrilli Lace. And they both tell me he has one option left.
O'Neal Cruz?
Yeah, if they wanted to send him to the Myers.
There's no way they would ever do that.
Why?
That would be, I mean, because their whole entire program or their whole entire plan this year was built around him.
I know, but it was built partially around Davis, too, and look at that situation.
Right, but I think Cruz is a little bit further down, right?
I mean, he's hitting 241 with no power. There's just nothing, and he strikes out more than anybody in baseball, percentage-wise, practically. Because I see one guy who's still in his prime, who's a proven major league hitter from your lineup last night, and that's Brian Reynolds. One guy.
Was there a question there? Was there a question there? Was there a question there?
I guess the question was, I think, what did I follow up with? Am I seeing that correctly or something like that? Better phrase, the question could have been or should have been, do you feel like you've been handed a lineup that no matter how you configure it isn't going to work? You know, because that's the truth from last night, Paul. And from the season, I should say.
I find it very.
They have one guy who's in his prime, who has something of a hitting resume, and nobody's given Brian Reynolds MVP votes. He's a slightly above average player.
Right. I would tell you this. If you look at it, they shouldn't be in this situation, though. If you look at the pedigree of some of the guys they have, they shouldn't be in this. These guys.
You mean pedigree, not major league pedigree?
No,
just
but I
their
mean,
talent
the,
level?
I mean, allegedly, according to where they were drafted and signed and all that other stuff, they should not be in this situation. They should be in a situation where these guys are developed and ready to go. And I know major league hitting is hard, and he said that a few times, but some of these guys should be further ahead than they are. That's what's troubling to me. Like you've had Henry Davis in your system 4 years.
Right.
And I know he's a young player and yada, 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 but is there anything that you have seen this year, any glimpse at all, that suggests that he's going to figure it out this year?
No.
He looks completely lost and completely overmatched.
No,
okay?
he needs a trip to the minors.
I know O'Neal Cruz is what he is. I get it. You know, he's coming off an injury and all that stuff. He should be further ahead than he is. Brian Reynolds is a.
What about Sawinski?
You know, Sawinski's a guy I've always felt like is a fourth outfielder at best, situational player that maybe gets you some home runs off the bench. I don't have. I'm talking about the guys that they're supposed to be riding right now.
I would say Sawinski's one, and I agree with you. I don't know that he's a viable everyday player, but they thought that this guy is a 4-5 type hitter.
Well,
who's going to hit home runs for you? Who's only 25? Who's coming into his own? And it's again, we're off to a disastrous start. We asked him at the beginning, what's the case for keeping Andy Haynes? And basically, Shelty said it's a team-wide, letdown But there's only one guy who, on his job description, is, quote, hitting coach.
You're right.
And it's not about the month of April. It's about 2 years plus the month of April where they just, I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know. I do know that they're bottom five in runs scored since he came onto campus, you know?
Right.
Is it all his fault? No. It might he completely not be at fault because they don't have any good players? Maybe. But that's where you have to start, for God's sakes. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That and calling up guys from the minors.
Right. That's the whole point. You get into a situation where you basically are sitting here and you say to yourself, Yeah. Well, you know, it's the old thing. You can't fire the players. You know, you can't fire a bunch of players. You can't fire all the players. So you've got to do something to move on. You know,
could
with
fire five of them.
Right. But you've got to do something so you can move on from the one guy who is at the top of the food chain. And I think that that's the thing. One of the things that's really frustrating to me, Joe, is that it doesn't seem like from the top, and when I mean top, it doesn't seem like there is a whole lot of motivation to be held accountable. And what I mean by that is, like, if I was the owner of the team, I would be walking to, I would be in Charrington's office every single day.
Yeah.
Why is Andy Haynes still here?
Yeah, well, that's what we started with today.
You know, or
Bob Nutting needs to pull an Art Rooney and say our offense doesn't work, because that was bottom. That was rock bottom last night. That was the Steelers in Cleveland the day before Canada got fired.
Pull the idea that, hey, this is not working. You need to change this. And also have some discussions about some of these guys we're talking about that are in the minors. Look, I don't care what boxes you think they've checked or haven't checked. They got to be better than some of the guys you're running out there every single night.
Right. He, and I think this is a perfect time for him to do something here. I have a hot take that's unrelated to any of this or really anything, and I don't even know why I looked it up. But I'm going to tell you this right now, and I don't know if you agree with this city limits or not, Paul. I thought Sam Howell was pretty good last year for Washington. I mean, he played for the Commanders. I'm looking at his game log right now, Paul. This guy against the Eagles one game went 39 of 52 for 400 yards, four touchdowns, and a pick. That's Pickett's whole career in one game.
Right.
He had another game against the Artie Smith's Atlanta team where he was three touchdowns, no picks. He had another game against Seattle. 29 of 44 for 312, three touchdowns and no picks. And then granted, he slid badly at the end of the season. He's playing for Washington.
Right.
I thought when I watched them, the rare occasions when I would tune in and see Washington, that he was pretty damn good and a lot better than Pickett. And in the right system with weapons and everything else, I think the kid's pretty good.
How do you think he'll do in Seattle? Obviously, they have Geno Smith, but...
I don't know. It was his first year as a starter. He also runs, by the way. He averaged 5.5 yards a carry, got almost 300 yards and five touchdowns.
Right.
I think the kid's pretty good. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I think he's fine. He's not somebody that moves the needle, but he's an average NFL quarterback.
I think he might be a needle mover, Limits.
With decent weapons, he's okay. But
weapons in a good system?
He's not somebody that wins big games in December.
How do we know that already? He's 10 years old, Sam Howell.
I don't like the decision-making that he made. Now, I'm not studying every single play of the Washington football team slash commander slash whatever you want to call him these days, but it just, I don't know. He's somebody who threw for a lot of yards partly because Washington was losing in a lot of games.
I think that's a very unfair charge from you, and I resent it.
I would say of the younger quarterbacks in the league, he's one that probably has a chance to be pretty good.
I agree.
I watch him play, and he's got the basic physical tools that some of these guys I watch, and I'm like, that guy can't make the – there's certain throws this guy can't make, or this guy's not very athletic.
He makes throws, man.
He makes throws. He can throw. I mean, I would say if you put him in the right system, yeah, I think he could be a good player.
Is he the best quarterback of that draft class?
Here's a hot take for you.
No.
Limitless wonder.
No.
If you had given me a choice of Justin Fields or Sam Howell this offseason, I would have taken Howell. Hot take.
How was the Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett draft, right?
Yes. There was a guy that was drafted Mr. Irrelevant at the end of that. Yes. But if you take Mr. Irrelevant out of that, Brock Purdy.
Then yes, he is.
So you had Howell.
You had Levis and Butthead. Was that the same draft or no?
Yes. No. Levis was last year.
Oh, yeah.
So you had Howell.
You had Willis.
Malik Willis.
Pickett.
Kenny Pickett.
Desmond, get rid of him.
Desmond.
Ritter.
Ritter.
Matt Corral.
I forgot all about him.
Chris Oladukun.
Chris Oladukun.
Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Put
Chris
some respect
Oladukun
on his name.
Bailey Zappi. That has to be the, if Purdy hadn't come along, that's the worst quarterback class of all time.
It's up there.
Thank
it's
God
pretty,
for
but there,
Purdy.
There was a couple that were.
Skylar Thompson.
It's up there with Jake Locker, the Blake Bortles draft.
This is the worst quarterback class of all time, save for Purdy.
Well, Purdy makes it, you know what I mean? Here it is right here. Look, listen to this. I found this article when I was talking about this, doing a show the one time. Okay? Mm. How about this? So they have this as the worst. 2007.
Let's hear it.
First rounders, Jamarcus Russell and Brady Quinn.
Well, of course, he did beat the Steelers in a Thursday night game, but go ahead.
Round two, Kevin Kolb, John Beck, Drew Stanton.
Oh, my God.
Round three, Trent Edwards.
Bills.
Round four, Isaiah Standback.
He stood back for his whole career.
Round five, Jeff Rowe and Troy Smith. Round six, Jordan Palmer. Round seven, Tyler Thigpen. And the undrafted free agent. There was one that was undrafted free agent. He was actually the best of the entire list, Matt Moore.
That's borderline tragic.
That is definitely the worst. That is because they don't even have a Brock Purdy.
I'm telling you. Sam Howell could be a good quarterback, but let's talk receivers. Let's talk all these Steelers stories. Bryant McFadden, did you reach out to him yet, Limitless Wonder?
No, I need you to pass along his information.
Oh, well,
I personally don't have it.
He, you know, intimated that something big is happening with a playmaker at receiver. Somebody said, boy, it doesn't look like that today. And he said, what did he say? Be patient?
Patience, my brother.
Patience, my brother. I like that. And Bryant's a very, very sharp and connected guy. Could it mean Cortland Sutton? Even though the Broncos say they aren't moving on and the Niners say they aren't moving on from Ayuk or Samuel, a lot of teams say things. Let's go out to Denver to Andrew Mason from denversports.com. Do I have that right, Andrew?
Yeah, denversports.com and 104.3 The Fan in Denver. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. What is happening out there with Cortland Sutton? Is there any chance they would still move on from him? And do you think he could wind up in Pittsburgh?
Well, as a former owner of the Broncos would say that in the United States, anything can be bought or sold for the right price. Anything has a price. So I think with Cortland Sutton, it's a matter of meeting whatever that price tag is perceived to be by the Broncos. But I think they, you know, I think they're willing to ride it out and get what they feel would be a fair price, which may be more than others are willing to pay. Now, of course, what's going on with Cortland Sutton is he is not at off-season workouts. Those began a couple of weeks back, and he is not there because he wants more guaranteed money on his contract. He, you know, he signed a four-year deal back midway through the 2021 season, has gotten past the guaranteed money, would like more guaranteed money, and that's why he's not there. And so the question is, does he really want to be in Denver going forward with a new quarterback in likely Bo Nix, their first-round pick, whose skill set may not mesh with him when you've got, and then obviously in Pittsburgh, now you have Russell Wilson, and Wilson, you know, kind of buying time, moving around and then throwing a moonshot. That really does actually play into Cortland Sutton's skill set and was a big part of why he had a career high in touchdown catches last year with 10.
Well, and I think that's the big question is, if, you know, if it's a contract dispute, there's still a chance that Denver and Cortland Sutton can come to some sort of an agreement on an extension or whatever he's looking for in order to make this whole thing go away.
That's a good question. And I think part of it may also depend on just the other receivers that the Broncos have in there. And this may be something where, from Denver's perspective, it doesn't come to a resolution until they see how Tim Patrick a solid receiver who isn't as dynamic going up for those jump balls but can make catches in traffic, how he looks coming off of 2 years of injuries, a torn ACL in the 2022 training camp and a torn Achilles a year later. So he hasn't played since January of 2022, but is a very reliable receiver and could handle that X receiver role that Tim Patrick has had, that Courtland Sutton has had. If they find out that Patrick can do that, then all of a sudden Sutton becomes a little more expendable in terms of what they're trying to put together on offense. So the Broncos may be in a position to be patient on this, see how Tim Patrick looks, and may also say, okay, we're going to sit and wait, and maybe we get the best deal. If we want to move on from Courtland Sutton, maybe we get a better deal going into training camp. And then if they don't get the deal they want, I think they're more than happy to put him out there, even though he's not his skill set may not be best accentuated by Bo Nix if Nix happens to be the starting quarterback.
Andrew Mason from 104.3 The Fan in Denver. All right, Andrew, if you had to characterize the Russell Wilson experience in one paragraph or so, how would you do that? And do you think he has a chance to do something good here?
Well, even though the Broncos invested a lot to get Russell Wilson, you look back on it and you see that there was a lot of misalignment. First of all, rewinding the clock back to early months of 2022, they've just hired Nathaniel Hackett as the head coach. Nathaniel Hackett comes over from Green Bay, where he's worked with Aaron Rodgers for back-to-back seasons in which Rodgers won the MVP. Plan A was Aaron Rodgers. And when that failed to come to fruition and Rodgers re-signed with the Packers, Plan B became, oh, well, Russell Wilson is an accomplished quarterback and he's available. Let's go get him. But Wilson and Hackett putting the concepts they wanted to run together, it was a Frankenstein's monster of an offense that was too deep, too complex, didn't work, and Wilson had the worst season of his career, and Hackett got fired after 15 games, and there were other things going wrong with Nathaniel Hackett as well. And then you bring in Sean Payton, and Payton wants a rhythm and timing-based offense, 1-2 and out, and that's not Russell Wilson's game. Wilson is at his best when he's going beyond the structure of the play, making things happen by buying time in the backfield and extending it and receivers breaking off their routes. It's definitely much more improv, as it were. Or maybe a better comparison is, Sean Payton wants a quarterback who's going to be, the conductor of an orchestra playing everything as it's written on the sheet of music. And Russell Wilson's strength is he's more of a jam band type of quarterback. He's kind of going with the flow of things and doing things beyond structure. And so it was completely misaligned there for 2 years with Russell Wilson. If it works out, part of it is going to be, letting Wilson do what he do best and living with the fact that it's beyond play structure. And then if that's how it ends up going and you can kind of live with the high variance, then it's got a chance to work in Pittsburgh.
Well, and I think the other question that a lot of people here have is how much does Russell Wilson have left in the tank? I watched him play last year. I didn't get the sense that he was an aging quarterback at the end of the rope, right? I mean, you watched him obviously up close and personal. He's still got a couple of years left in him, doesn't he?
A couple of years, yeah. I mean, I think he came to Denver with this goal of playing into his mid-40s. I don't think that's possible. Where you see the age starting to affect him is when he's taking off and running. I think of one play in particular that they had in the game against the New York Jets last year. He takes off. He ends up falling just short of the first down, and the Broncos have a turnover on downs because it was fourth down. And that's the kind of play that he would have gotten pretty easily just 4 or 5 years ago, right? And so taking off and being able to make things happen with his legs, that's always been part of the Russell Wilson equation, but he isn't as dynamic there in that part of his game as he used to be. And that's a huge tool on his tool belt. And if that's not there to the degree, is he able to make up for it with being a more precise passer based on what we saw the last couple of years? That didn't happen as well. So I think it's sort of accepting kind of who and what he is in this year when he's going to turn 36 years of age during the season.
Lastly, Andrew, we got about a minute left. How would you describe the vibe around the drafting of Bo Nix? Are people excited about that? Are they cynical about that? What's happening?
I think it's a little of both, depending on who you ask. I mean, the thing that most people will say is that he is a good fit for Sean Payton. Short to intermediate accuracy, good job of being able to place the ball. You know, he can get it to the correct shoulder when he's throwing a receiver. He will lead a receiver and allow that pass-catching target to stay in stride and accumulate some yardage after the catch. The question on Bo Nix is he going to be able to do enough, especially outside the numbers and down the field, to really stress a defense to where there are going to be enough gaps in coverage short and underneath. And that's where the arm strength, arm talent equation comes into play. And that's part of why you were talking about Bo Nix being the sixth quarterback taken, because he didn't have the cannon that, for example, Drake May possessed going off the board 3 to New England. So that's where the questions lie. If it works, it definitely is a scheme fit. The other question also is, what is his ceiling here? I mean, Broncos fans got kind of spoiled with Peyton Manning and then a long time ago, John Elway. If Bo Nix comes in and his arc looks like that of Derek Carr, is that enough for the fan base? And is that enough for the team that is trying to cope with a Goliath like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs there atop the AFC West? That's a big question, too.
And then I got a yes or no. Jerry Jeudy comes to the Browns and is a game-changing type player.
No, because I don't think he will be as consistent as Browns fans are hoping. I think there will be some flashes, but at the same time, there are also going to be head-scratching moments where you wonder, why can't he do this game in and game out? And that's basically what he is at this point. When he's at his ceiling, he'll do some great things, and he'll get separation, and you'll be like, wow, but can he do that on a consistent basis? That's always been the question.
Andrew, we really appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
You too. That's Andrew Mason. He didn't make it sound like it was imminent, the Cortland Sutton thing, by any means.
Exactly. I mean, it sounds...
But everything and everybody's for sale in the NFL, right?
They are. I mean, he's obviously a guy who... The reason these rumors start, it's so easy to see how it starts, though. He's a guy that's right now in a contract dispute.
Right.
I mean, you can call whatever you want to call it. Hold out, hold in, whatever, you know, all the cutesy words we use. At the end of the day, he wants a new contract. The Broncos, at least to this point, have sort of balked at giving it to him. And so he's doing what his only mechanism really as a player is. And, okay, well, I'm not going to come to your offseason workouts. To which, if I were the Broncos, I'd say, okay, who gives a, you know, we'll see in September when the game checks start. You know, I'm sure you'll be here. We don't need you at OTAs and minicamp. Who cares?
You know, something very curious is happening here, Paul. We said that Kevin, I'm sorry to interrupt, although you sounded like you were finished anyway.
No,
right?
Well, the other thing I was going to say was the one thing I wanted to ask him, are people in Denver excited about Bo Nix?
I did ask him that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
It must have been mixed in with a lot of.
It was mixed in, yes.
Was it? What? Well, how did you ask it?
I said, what's the vibe in Denver about Bo Nix? People excited or cynical? Oh. He said a little bit of both.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I missed that.
Sorry, you missed it.
I'm just saying, that's what I would have wanted to know. Are people excited about it? What did he say?
He said a mix. Yes, you missed that, too. Listen to this. Listen. Don't disappear on me here. Kevin Weeks tweeted out these eye emojis, Paul, with a photo of downtown, our downtown here, across the Clemente Bridge. What does this mean? Is there an event, big event, NHL-wise, coming to Pittsburgh? I do know this. 21 hours ago, he tweeted this. Listen to this. There could be one current NHL coach that might potentially hit or surpass Mike Babcock's industry-leading $7 million per year deal he signed with the Maple Leafs. It would take plenty of factors for it to align, but plots are thickening. What is going on here? And then I have a bunch of people under the week's tweet texting Sully to the Devils. They want this to happen, or they think this is going to happen. That talk, right? And that the Devils would then lavish him, tear up his contract and make him higher, paid?
Is the NHL like the NFL where you can trade a coach?
I don't believe so. We looked into this last year. So how would that even work? He would resign.
Right.
And move on to the – I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
What do you think? Just Jesper Bratt and Jack Hughes for Mike Sullivan.
I'd like that deal.
What about that deal? Put that deal together.
Why did he – what current NHL coach could surpass $7 million a year?
Well
– and in what – if he's a current coach with his current team?
The Maple Leafs got a lot out of that deal with Babcock.
Yeah, they sure did.
You know, it would almost have to be Sullivan, wouldn't it?
I mean, who else could it be?
If you were the Maple Leafs, after tonight when you get eliminated again.
It ain't Tortorella.
Yeah. After tonight, when you get eliminated again,
yes,
I would make a run at Mike Sullivan if I was the Maple Leafs. Why not?
Is it Jim Montgomery? He's done nothing in Boston yet. He's won one playoff series. Did he even win that series? Now I can't remember. Yes, they did. Would it be Rod Brind'Amour?
How about my man in Vancouver?
Oh, he ain't making $7 million a year. Who else could it be? Limitless wonder.
There's not going to sign Mike Sullivan to an extension right now.
I know he's in the middle of a contract. You'd have to tear it up, but I'm just trying to think.
But if he was going to move to a different team, they would do that.
What other guy? Let's just forget about who's signed and who's not. What other guy would you say that's a $8 million coach, the highest paid NHL coach ever? Would be this guy.
Is Rick Tocchet's deal up?
He just got there. It's just he's not making $8 million a year.
Yeah.
Right? They still have to finish off the series here.
It almost would have to be Sullivan. That New Jersey was going to take Sullivan. And
John Cooper for a new team, maybe?
That is somebody right there. By the way, did you hear his rant last night did you hear his rant?
No.
Oh, my goodness. He went off on goalie interference. Basically said what we're doing now is we might as well put these guys in skirts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he went on a good rant. It was actually a really good post-game rant. I like that kind of stuff.
There's only two guys. Those are the guys. Jared Bednar, the Avalanche? No. His birthday is a day before mine. Limits, I just noticed.